you know, for me, that's one of the big takeaways. That's why stillness is so important to me, is like, because we're so busy and we're never stopping. We're just running.
I'm Allie Bonner, and welcome to Queencast, the show where we interview badass queens about body image, business, and beyond. Hi friends, welcome back to Queencast. Today I'm talking to Francina Call of Be Still Tea. I found Francina through Instagram of all places, which I feel like is how I make most of my friends these days, but I digress. She's a mom of five and a badass business owner. She just started her tea company, and I wanted to bring someone on to share really what it's like to start a company from the ground up. I feel like a lot of times, you know, you see interviews of people who have made it or sold their companies, and it's just kind of hard to relate, especially if you're currently, you know, wanting to start a business and you're at ground zero and you're like, where do I go from here? Well, Francina has tons of great advice. She also has an incredible story about depression and suicide prevention and everything that her company is built on. It's a phenomenal episode, and I highly encourage you to go follow her at Be Still Tea. And let's get right into
it. Thank you so much for being here. So for everyone listening, Francina is such an incredible human. I met her over Instagram, which is so millennial of us, but I feel like that's the way the world works these days. And she has just such an incredible story. I had to bring her on and share that. And she's starting a food company, or a drink beverage company, actually. And she'll talk more about that. But yeah, so for everyone who is just tuning in and doesn't know about you and your story, let's just start from the beginning. So who are you? What's your background? And you can go as in-depth or as quick as you want.
So my name is Francina. I was born and raised in Zimbabwe, which is a small country in Southern Africa, and have lived in the United States for over 20 years. I am trained to be a physical therapist. So I went to school and studied to be a PT. And I went into it because I really love people. And I love to help people. And what I loved about physical therapy is that you really got connected to the story of people and their journeys. And then as I was part of their healing journey, as a therapist, I have five children.
Amazing. Yeah. So she's superwoman. Yeah. Psycho or superwoman.
I don't know. I'm married to a wonderful man from Poland. We met dancing salsa.
So cute.
And we have, two girls and three boys.
Amazing.
So, yeah. I have always had a passion for tea. And so, you know, as life was progressing and we were having all these babies, you know, every time I traveled, I would collect teas as my souvenir. And my kids would just constantly say, "Mom, you have so much tea. You should just start a tea business. Mom, you have so much tea." And so after a while, I just kind of started sticking, and I was like, maybe I should do this, you know? And so anyway, so that's kind of the fast version of who I am.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for sharing. I think that's so cool. I mean, I think it's awesome, and it just really goes to show what kind of person you are too, because I think a lot of us have, you know, relatives or friends or something in our lives that are like, okay, like, you're so good at, you know, baking, or you're so good at this, like, you should start it. And you're kind of like, yeah, like, but I need a steady paycheck, and that's comfortable for me. And that's totally fine for, you know, I have tons of friends that love, like, their 9-to-5. They love the, you know, reliability of it. But I think it really just goes to show, especially as someone, you know, like you, who has five kids and, like, clearly probably doesn't have a lot of time on her hands. You know, you're not sitting around twiddling your thumbs. like, your passion and drive is so apparent. So I guess I'd love to hear kind of just your, like, have you always kind of been entrepreneurial, or was this something, like, what kind of, you know, inspired you to really just go for it and take that leap?
Well, you know, I think I, growing up in Africa, in Zimbabwe, but I think I can actually say in Africa, because I feel like African people just have this entrepreneurial spirit about them. You know, it's like, you have a regular job, but you've always got a side hustle, you know, and my mom was that way. She was a hairdresser, and I helped her in her hair shop. And she was, you know, on her days off, had a seamstress. She was selling stuff. She was selling things to people in offices. She was taking orders for this, that. And my dad was the same way. And so I feel like that has always been kind of modeled for me. But, you know, I think I am a bit of an anomaly in terms of, like, the circles that I've traveled in, because, you know, being a PT is very sort of heady, and you go to school and you study and, you know, go and you've got a steady paycheck. But I have always been a very adventurous, jump off the cliff kind of girl. Mm. So having, you know, 5 kids, this is kind of an anomaly. I'm in a biracial marriage. And actually, I didn't say this at the beginning, but we have 4 biracial children. And we adopted a white little girl. Mm-hmm. And so our whole family is definitely not conventional. And so I always say I don't have a box. I always lived outside the box. And so starting the business for me was kind of, you know, I don't know, at first it just seemed like this crazy idea. But then as I started to sort of sit in myself and connected with, what if I could do the thing I really love? And it's not that PT wasn't what I loved, because I still enjoy that part of it and I could go back to it. But I really love tea and I really love what it did for my soul and the calm and the peace that it brought to me. And so, you know, the idea of living that out and helping other people live that out just seemed like I got to go big or go home. Like what? Mm-hmm. What is there to lose? I have one life. I have one shot. And it seems kind of cliche because you hear people say, go for your dreams, right? But we have all these like barriers, and I have them too. But, you know, as my kids are growing up, my oldest is 14 and my youngest is 3 now. I'm just like, wow, I have one shot to show them how to live out their best life. And if I don't, if I'm not living it out, they're not going to do what I'm saying. They're going to do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of it is just the motivation is to help my kids feel like live out their lives with no barriers and just go do the thing you were made to do.
Right. So. Oh, that's so beautiful. And almost leading by example too, where you're like, you know, because I think so many parents are like, do whatever you want, you know, or like live your dream, but then they're maybe stuck in a job that they hate because they obviously right. have to support all the kids. Right. You know, there's, right. of course, there's like the responsibility side of things, but at the same time, it's so cool how you're really taking charge and yeah. And like leading by example and being like, look, I'm actually living out my dream. So
yeah. I do want to say this too. Like it's not, I'm very, very blessed that my husband made enough money that I could do this on the side. Cause I realized that every person's situation is very different. And I feel like everything just kind of came together in a way that made sense at the time I was doing it. I am definitely feeling like a crazy person every single day. But
I feel when you.
When I open those tea packages, I swear I just go into like this other zone. I'm like, yes, I'm tired as hell. But this feels right.
Totally. So,
yeah.
Oh, it's all worth it in that moment. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah. So on the phone, you know, when we first started chatting, you shared a really special story of just the mission and kind of inspiration behind Be Still Tea and how it relates to your mental health struggles. So I'd love to hear more about that and just, you know, your history with that and sort of how that led into your mission with your company.
So it was like back in 2013, 2014, like right November, you know, December, that time, I kind of fell upon some really, really difficult, traumatic situations that challenged both my physical health. I had found a massive tumor in the back of my throat. And my mom came from Zimbabwe to help me with the recovery because it was going to be a pretty significant surgery. And when she got off the plane, she collapsed and was in the ICU because of a blood clot in her leg. And so my whole world literally crashed. And I'm like facing this massive surgery. I didn't know if my mom was going to live. And, you know, the short story is she did. And I went through the surgery and everything went okay. But then a whole bunch of other familial stuff started coming out, and it was a really, really difficult time. And so I kind of started falling into this really intense, deep hole. And at that point, you know, my husband started saying, hey, I think you need to get some therapy. We need to get some help, because it was so hard to climb out of the sadness, you know? Mm. And so, you know, when I stopped seeing my own value on this earth is when I was like, okay, I really have to do something here, because I became suicidal. I didn't see the purpose of my life and I wanted to end my life. Mm. And I'm so grateful I found an amazing therapist who just kind of, I mean, I was seeing her 3-4 times a week, And at the time I was nursing my youngest, my fourth child, and I couldn't get on any medication at that time. So I just was going to therapy like hard. And it was a two-part process. I think part of it is like first showing up for myself and saying, I need to get this help. But then the other part of it is the internal work that I had to do for myself, which was surrendering and accepting what was happening around me. And I didn't have control over a lot of what was happening around me. Like, you cannot influence people who've made a decision that may be influencing your life. But in that season, I also learned that in my accepting what was happening around me, I could then connect with the parts of myself that can make a difference for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of, I had to surrender. I had to stop. And in the stillness of all of that is where sort of my purpose and my value began to illuminate itself. I had to say, I can't change this. I can't change what's happening, but I can influence how I respond to this situation. And my response to the situation was to get in there, do the work, and come out on the other side. And I remember saying to my husband, when I get through this dark time, I want to get a tattoo. And I want this tattoo to remind me to never allow another person's issues with me to cause me to want to end my life again. Because my children, I mean, I wasn't even, this is what mental health is really like. You get to a place that's so irrational. Like, I had four beautiful young children at home, and yet I didn't think that they needed me because, you know, I was so sad about this other situation that was happening. So anyway, I got a tattoo, and the tattoo said, be still, because it was in my stillness that I learned to find myself, and I started to find my value and my purpose. And the I in my be still is a semicolon, which is kind of like a suicide prevention sign. The semicolon symbolizes a person going through mental health struggle and the importance of suicide prevention. And for me, the semicolon symbolized that my story is still being written. It wasn't over unless I ended it. And I didn't, I still had so much life to live, right? And so, so that's kind of how Be Still came about. And part of the other side of my tattoo is a lotus flower. And lotus flowers are flowers that grow out of mud. And I feel like out of my darkness, I found myself. I learned to be still, and my life went on. And that invigorated me to sort of show up in my life with a greater sense of purpose and not just let life happen to me, but really show up and be intentional about, hey, I can't let all these external factors dictate who I am and what I end up doing with my life. You know, so
beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. I really want to acknowledge you for that, because I mean, mental health, while it is so, I mean, everyone deals with mental health issues, you know, of course it's a spectrum, and, but I think it's still so difficult to talk about, even though it's becoming more mainstream, right? And more people are talking about it, but I do want to thank you for sharing, because you're going to help so many people just by sharing your story. And I have goosebumps right now listening, because just, I don't know, the way that you share it is so relatable and just real. So, thank you for that. But, I'd love to really go, like, so many things that you touched on that I want to dig into, but I think the first thing really being, just like the irrationality around mental health issues and really, you know, knowing when to ask for help as well. And so for you, I guess, because, you know, I personally have struggled with bouts of, you know, really, I would say like light depression, right? And nothing, you know, never, well, I've been like pretty bad when I was struggling with my eating disorder, but, but never really like, you know, heavily suicidal by any means. And so I just, you know, I don't really know from a personal level, like what it's like to be in that darkness. And how did you know, you know, or how did you even start to reach out for help if you're feeling so, you know, kind of like you said, irrational? Was it sort of an external, like, did your husband notice something and he was like, okay, we need to, like, you know, you need it out, like your therapist to help you with this? Or I guess, how does that process look at the beginning? Because for someone who's listening that's maybe feeling, you know, really depressed, and they're like, I don't know where to turn, like, do you have any advice there?
Well, I think for me, it was, again, it was two parts. Definitely my husband noticing that, wow, this is really taking a toll on our family. And because you've got lots of kids, they let you know when stuff's not going well, you know? And so, you know, there was that part of it where he was like, look, I really think we need to look into this. I think we need to get help. But there's also another part of it, I think, for myself, just because, you know, I am a woman of faith, and I feel like there's always this sort of this force behind me that I felt like was like, look, I can't do this. Mm. And that awareness of, I cannot do this on my own. I have got to get help, because the darkness was sort of like closing in on me. So, I mean, you know, I realized that not everybody has somebody in their life to kind of point them towards like, hey, you got to go get help. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, if you're in a place and you're starting to feel like the world is closing in on you, or if you're feeling like you don't have a choice, the first choice you have is to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. Showing up for yourself. And I think that if there was the number one thing I learned, you know, from my journey and just learning to be still, is you have to show up for you. Like, I have a quote that I love that says, you are the best thing that has ever happened to you. Mm. If I don't show up to take care of myself, no one else is going to. Mm-hmm. And so part of it is like, you know, the little ounce of strength that you have and say, what is the next best thing that I can do for myself? If it is dark, where can I find light? And sometimes it's just going to a friend and saying, can you help me? Because mm-hmm. I am struggling with X, Y, and Z. What can I do? Right? It's just like mm-hmm. even just going to a friend, because you know, sometimes it's daunting to go and say, well, I don't even know where to begin to look for a mental health professional or something like that, right? Go to a friend. And that friend can guide you to the next step and to the next step, right? Because I think that sometimes when we look at the whole picture, it's overwhelming. But starting by asking, what is the next best thing that I can do for myself?
Absolutely. I love that so much. And I relate just from like the eating disorder side of things, because I, you know, remember being so nervous to reach out for help. And it's such a heavy burden to bear right. on yourself. And like, I think the biggest thing that really helped me was if like the tables were turned and someone either in my family or like a close friend came to me and was saying, yeah, you know, I'm having suicidal thoughts, or, you know, I'm struggling with disordered eating, like you would come at them with nothing but love and support. And so I think right. we're just always so hard on ourselves and think that people around us are going to think we're weird or broken or something. And it's just simply like not the case.
Well, I would agree. And I think that there's also a societal stigma around yeah. mental health, right? And growing up in Zimbabwe, like I didn't even know that people could go to therapy. And you know, it was always someone who had those problems. Like mm-hmm. it was a different category of human that went to seek mental health. And so for me, it was, you know, you have to kind of overcome the stigma, you have to overcome the shame and realize that I'm it. Like I am all I've got at the end of the day. Like, yes, we can have family around us, but no one else really understands what's going on inside you but you.
Totally. Oh, that's so important. And it's really just, yeah, I mean, trusting your intuition right. and your gut too on, you know, knowing something's wrong. Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions as someone who, you know, obviously has never dealt with like a deep, true depression, you know, how, I guess, and for people listening, because everyone, you know, we all feel the spectrum of emotions, right? But like, in your opinion, like what is kind of the difference between just feeling like sad and like sad for an extended period of time versus kind of where you were and something much deeper? Like, is there a way to kind of differentiate, or is it depend like person to person?
Well, I mean, I think there's definitely a part of it where, yes, it is dependent person to person. But I would say for myself, there's the sadness that's just like, oh, I'm having a bad day. And you wake up the next morning and it's like, oh, it's a new day. And you go on. And then there's sort of this cloak of sadness that you just can't shake. Mm. And then it starts to turn into, I'm worthless. I have no value. Nobody needs me. Like that, for me, that's when I was like, whoa. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm a pretty upbeat person. I'm a glasses half full kind of girl. And I can see a positive in almost any life situation. But when it starts to get to that place where you're questioning why you're here mm-hmm. and you don't want to be around people anymore, like that for me is sort of that signal that, hey, this is more than just, you know, a bad day. Because, yeah. you know, you can have a couple bad days, but if it's sticking around for longer, you know, then it's like, whoa, something else may be going on. And I think people need to also have grace to shake off the stigma, like I said before, because some of us just have a chemical imbalance that's mm-hmm. just, you know, and some of it is generational. Like if you had a parent that struggled with depression, there's a chance you could too. And I think that feeling sad in and of itself should not be like, oh, something must be wrong with me. No, it's like someone who's diabetic, right?
Exactly.
It's like, how do you, you know, how can a diabetic be like, oh, why do I have to be you? It's just who you are. And mm-hmm. I think I always try to encourage people to look at the positive. Thank goodness there's something that can be done to help me, because growing up in Zimbabwe, it's not a given that everybody gets medical, you know, attention or meds that can help you to lift you out of those chemical imbalances or, you know, depression and those kind of things. So yeah, I think, yeah, you just have to give yourself a lot of grace and go gentle with yourself, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. The stigma around medication in particular, I think, is a huge one. And I mean, obviously, like, this is not related to mental health, but like, even with my thyroid issues, which is like, totally not even stigmatized, I was like, oh, I'm not going on medication. Like, I think in the wellness bubble too, like, we have this like, oh no, I don't need that. And I feel that a lot too with mental health of people. It's like, oh, you can, you know, treat it with, you know, holistically or like CBD or I don't know, meditation. And it's like, okay, those things are nice and probably helpful, but like, yeah, I mean, did you experience that with, you know, and obviously we don't have to touch on like whether or not you're taking medication, but just like in general, like the, you know, stigma around like medication in mental health?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I definitely, you know, in my own experience, like, you know, my family, it's like, oh, why are you depressed? Like, just shake it off. Like, you know, you don't have anything to be depressed about. Look, you've got a great life or whatever, right? I'm personally not taking meds, but I struggled even at that time, you know, when I was really in a dark place exploring whether I should get on medication because of my own barriers around like, oh, well, what does that mean for me then? Oh, does that mean I'm too weak? I can't, you know, you go through those mental, and when you're in a dark place, everything feels like it's a reflection on your person versus, hey, I'm having an issue with depression right now. It's not a blanket statement on the totality of my humanness. It is just, this is, you know, it's like I broke a leg. That's what I got.
Yeah.
This is what I have. And I need to give this part of my life attention. I have family members who struggle with being on medication, because they think that, you know what, if I'm medicated, I'm weak in some way, I'm not able to shake it off. And I've had to just encourage them and say, look, this is what you need for today to get through what you're getting through today. Being on this med, on these meds, help you to be a better person, help you to be a better friend, help you to function in your life in a way that's productive versus trying to make it on your own. And so, yeah, I have family members that are on medication, and I feel like I've tried my best to sort of champion them to say, you are doing the best you can. You are showing up in your life and taking care of yourself in a way that you need to take care of yourself so you can function in the rest of your life in a way that's productive and honoring to the people that are in your life, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's great advice. And it's interesting too, because Eric, my partner, his dad is a psychiatrist. And like, I've always been really, you know, just talking to him in passing, I'm just like so fascinated about, you know, the type of people that he works with and everything. And he was saying it's interesting because like medication sometimes can be an awesome, like if someone's actually really trying to go, you know, the holistic route, sometimes it's just an awesome stepping stone to get that person, like give them the momentum and, you know, get them out of a dark place so that they're motivated enough. Because some people, you know, it's like you can't even get out of bed. And so it's like physically like that movement and momentum. So then maybe it helps them start exercising. And then that, you know, spirals into like good, you know, endorphins and stuff. So, it's just everyone, it's so individual. I would love to touch though on like the therapy side of things, because even, you know, I love my therapist. I am like such a huge proponent of therapy for everyone, but I definitely will say like, it took me a while to find a good fit. So was that something, cause it sounds like you had a really great, therapist that helped you through all this, but like, for people listening, maybe who are interested in therapy, like, was there some, you know, I guess things you looked for in your therapist or, I don't know, any tips on just like finding that right fit?
I was very, very lucky. The first person I went to was a great fit.
Yeah.
And I think that if I was to encourage anybody to go look for a therapist, I would say, find somebody who's empathetic, find somebody who listens, and find somebody who allows you to feel seen in your sessions. If you're walking away from your therapy sessions feeling like bad about yourself or like like you just didn't deliver something, or, you know, like that weighty feeling of like, oh, that felt weird, or am I a bad person? That's not a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. And I tell anybody that I can tell, you are the one who needs the help. So you keep trucking, honey, until you find the right person. Do not let, you know, the first person you meet that's not a good fit think, you know, oh, well, it's not going to work out. Look, maybe I'm not really meant to go to therapy. Oh, it's a sign. What? No, it's not. You keep going until you find the right person, because you're the one who needs help. And so you're showing up in your life to advocate for yourself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I am a huge proponent for it. And I think that mental health gets a bad rap, because if people go to doctors for well checks and stuff, mental health professionals are the well checkers of our brains. And if you think about the fact that our brains control almost everything that we do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, every choice that you make, it's passing through there.
Yeah.
And you need somebody to kind of be like, you know, give you a tune-up here and there. And, you know, while I don't need to go to therapy, you know, as much as I used to back in that dark time, I definitely feel that need, like a need to stay connected to therapy and stay connected to keep checking in on myself and say, hey, am I still showing up for myself? Am I still honoring myself? Am I still attracting things into my life that are not in my best interest, you know? And mm-hmm. you just got to keep checking on those things, because I know, like, for myself, I realized that when you begin the process of healing and you do the work of working through either family of origin stuff or whatever, when you run into a stressful situation, you revert back to the old system. Mm-hmm. And it's a practice to keep working the tools that you've learned in therapy, even in your stressful time. So yeah,
so many gems in that. Yeah, I agree with you. I think especially now too, right? Like our entire world it's a stressful time for everyone. And like, yeah, I also think it's interesting. I don't know if it's like a generational thing, but definitely I remember when I told my mom, you know, I was starting to go to therapy, she was like, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And I was just like, no, mom. And I had to really explain to her what you said, you know, about it's more of like a mental health check. Like it's like a physical, you know?
Right.
And it's subtle too. I think the things that I've learned and really taken away are subtle, but they're so powerful. Like, for example, one was, I was really big. I would project a lot on to other people. So, you know, around Eric, or for example, you know, we live together, obviously, and I would project like certain things, you know, maybe if like I had weirdness around food, especially. So like I would project that he was judging me for like what I was eating and
right.
just little things. And my therapist was like, that's not fair to him, you know, because you're projecting what he's thinking about you. And in reality, like, you know, after him, because we did therapy sessions together, and he was like, oh yeah. no, like, you know, guys are kind of, he's kind of clueless. So he's like, yeah. oh, I wasn't even thinking that at all. And like, I was creating this whole story in my head about, yeah. you know, like what he's thinking about what I'm eating and all this and just the drama. And so it's very subtle, I think, what therapy has done for me, but so powerful. And again, like, I love that you said that you do revert back to these things when, you know, under times of stress, because I've noticed that, you know, when I'll skip a session because I'm like, oh, I'm feeling pretty good, you know, like mm-hmm. life's good. I'm just working on my business, chugging along. And then I just, you slowly kind of feel yourself kind of get like in a rut. And then I go back to therapy and I'm like, oh, I just feel invigorated and like more centered and more myself. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, that's the practice that I feel like being still has taught me. Is that it makes me stop and ground myself in what is real and true in my life. You know, and just like the example you gave, like I'm a stress eater. When I'm stressed, I want to eat.
Same.
And, and when I stop and really listen to myself, I'm asking myself questions like, am I hungry? Why do I want to eat right now? You know, what is making me anxious and trying to cause me to go eat? And then the next question I'm asking is, can I influence or change what is causing this anxiety? And if I can, then I can take appropriate action to fix that. Am I tired? Do I need to just sleep? Is that what's going on? Am I thirsty? Right. And so, you know, for me, that's one of the big takeaways. That's why stillness is so important to me, is like, because we're so busy and we're never stopping. We're just running.
So true.
And living in our old systems, our old patterns, and those pathways are pretty, you know, deeply ingrained in us, right? Because that's that's like home. And we've done all this work to kind of grow into ourselves as we are now, right? And so you have to kind of do like a daily practice to keep yourself grounded and connected to the person you really want to be.
Mm, that's so powerful, especially in today's society and America in general. America, it's very America. Much like America. It's like, you know, grinding the American dream, like, right. You know, hustle. And especially on social media, you see all these, you know, entrepreneurs and Gary Vaynerchuk. It's like, you know, never sleep, like hustle, hustle. And like, I get anxious just talking about it right now, like thinking about it. And right. I think, yeah, I mean, I love. And let's go into Be Still, because I love this concept, you know, behind your company and just really taking a moment and like how precious that is. I mean, I love like waking up in the morning before everyone else, like having that moment to myself before the craziness of the day starts.
Right.
And but for a long time, I was terrified of that. And I think, you know, things like meditation have really helped me get comfortable with slowing down. Because I really labeled myself as like, oh, I just can't meditate. You know, I'm just like a busy person or whatever, but right. really it was a fear of hearing those thoughts for, right. you know, what's actually happening in that head.
Yeah.
So tell us more about, you know, starting a company. I mean, obviously like being still has helped tremendously with your mental health, but, you know, let's talk about that and how that relates to your company and like what mission, you know, you're wanting to put out into the world through tea, and kind of, yeah, like how you think tea can kind of contribute to that stillness.
So I find the process of making tea really meditative because, mm-hmm. you know, I did the process of like boil the water, you select the tea, like, and I have tons of teas and I call myself an emotional drinker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I call myself an emotional drinker because I feel like it really honors where I am that day. And if I am taking a moment before I make my tea to think about how am I feeling today? And what do I feel like drinking today? And then I select the tea that I'm going to drink. Right in that moment, I've just practiced honoring myself and honoring the choice that I have to connect and then choose something that will make me feel good in that moment. That was my best choice in that moment. And mm-hmm. then, you know, smelling the tea, letting it steep, all of those steps require moments of pause and you have to wait and there's nothing fast about it. It's a process. And then you kind of let it cool down as you smell it. And then, you know, you consume the tea slowly. And I always used to say this to my husband, even before like I knew anything about the specifics about tea. I feel like tea wakes you up very gently. When I drink caffeinated tea in the morning, it's just sort of like this good morning.
Yeah.
How are you doing today? So good. You know, so good to see you this morning. And I always used to say to him, like, coffee, whenever I would drink it, it wakes you up with like, ah! It's like a scream. Right.
Yeah.
And then you just get like this shot of caffeine and you're out the door. And then like people are crashing by like 10 o'clock or
that
11. Then they need another shot again. And then I watched this show once. And there was a tea guru who talked about the caffeine of tea is very self-releasing, slow-releasing. And it's just so gentle. And I'm like, exactly. It kind of mm-hmm. ushers you into the day in a very gentle way. And so that for me, that's the premise for me. Like, it's like, I feel like being still empowers you to live your life with intention as an active participant versus letting life happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm starting my day that way, or let's say your day started and it's the middle of the day and you're like, I need to take a pause. You've just created a little oasis to check in with yourself and figure out, hey, am I making choices today that are in alignment with what I was intending to do today or in alignment with who I really want to be? It's just creating space to really listen because you do matter. And unfortunately, just like you said, we live in a country and in a world where everything else matters. Like you're like the last thing on the totem pole, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I choose every tea with such intention and such love and care because I want when somebody sits down to feel like they had a moment with themselves. Like I selected the packaging that I chose because it's beautiful and I'm a very visual person. I think mm-hmm. the aesthetic of those paper tubes with the wooden lid, grounding, it's connected to nature. You know, I want people to feel like they're having an experience, like they're having a moment to just celebrate something about themselves in the middle of the day or in the morning or in the evening. And my husband and I have had a practice of drinking together at night once we're in bed. it's a way for us to connect as well, you know, mm-hmm. and we don't drink the same tea every night. We switch it up. What do you feel like today? What do you feel like today? Right. And so we're honoring one another and we're inspiring each other to show up for ourselves.
Mm, so cute. I love that. I want to start Eric and I have a little tea time at night. I'm going to be like, Francina inspired me. I love that so much. And I think in every other, you know, culture pretty much in the world, they have some sort of ritual around tea, right? And like, it really, I mean, here it's like, you know, coffee, of course, is a huge component of our culture, but it's like, yeah. you're not sitting and having a nice cup of coffee with someone and connecting over, you know, your plans for the day or your plans for life. It's very much like, all right, in line, express line at Starbucks, like, you know, right. tap your app to pay, like grab it and you're running onto the subway. And it's very like, go, 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 frenetic, yeah, stressful.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I love just the whole mission. And then of course your products are incredible as well. What has it been like starting your company in this climate? Because I would say now is probably like the hardest time to start a business, but there's also yeah. so many silver linings where more right. people are home, more people have more time for tea, right? So what has that been like for you?
It's been psychotic because yeah. I fell into homeschooling my children involuntarily, mm-hmm. Right as everything was like starting to happen for me. And I always say to my husband, I was like, I feel like I was just sort of gently guided into starting this because I think my natural tendency was like, let's just wait till this pandemic is over, you yeah. know? But I think I was surrounded by so many people that heard me talk about tea. I heard me talk about my passion, my vision, and people just started calling me up. Hey, is the tea ready? Do you have it now? And so like, as the pandemic was like starting to roll out, people would be like, can I come and take a look? And then I'm like, shoot, I guess I better get the package together. Right.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, someone came over and was like, oh, I better get the labels. In fact, my first official person who bought tea from me, I didn't even have the label, so I had to put a sticky note on top of the paper too.
That is like, you know, so great though. I love right? that. Yeah.
She's such a good friend. And she was like, don't worry. I just wanted to support you. And so she was my first purchase. And so like, it literally was like, okay, fine. I've got that purchase. So I guess I have two labels printed because the other two teams that she bought, I have the labels, but the other one I didn't. So I better work on getting the other label to her. And then a couple of weeks later, someone else called me. I didn't even have a website yet, you know?
Wow.
And so it was literally just like snowballing itself. Like this, my friend called and said, oh, I'm going to a retreat and I want to take some of your teas. I'm like, crap. I better get more of these labels done. And then, you know, after that, my husband and I were like, I guess I should take some pictures. So I went and took foam boards and I'm literally in my house trying to take what I thought would look like artsy pictures, which they all came out okay. I took them all with my iPhone, you know, yeah. and then I sit there taking a nap. And then suddenly I had a website and, you know, it's just been go, go, go. And, you know, I mean, yeah, I feel like a crazy person every day and like learning on the fly how to even navigate the whole social media thing. My worst nightmare was having to make a video. And I was like, thank God. When I launch, I'm going to be selling at farmers markets because I do much better in person and I can
really
see and feel my passion. Well, honey, there's no farmers markets. I better learn how to get you. I'm gonna learn. I'm gonna taking videos, and so I remember my first video. I must have taken like 5 takes. I was just like, "This is so stupid!" You know?
Yeah. You are not alone. Video is the worst. Oh my god! And it's the worst because it's like the most engaging. Everyone loves videos, but filming them, I get so sweaty. I'm like, can we just take another one? I remember we were auditioning for Shark Tank. We got like totally denied, but we're auditioning for Shark Tank, and like you need to do this. Like it wasn't even a long video, but maybe it was like 2 minutes or something. And we had to do so many takes. It was me, Eric, and our third co-founder, Ari, and all three of us, like, cause with three people, it's like, you're just adding another, you know, dynamic. And like,
so
like two of us would get it perfectly down, like the script. And then one person would mess up and it took us all day to do this 2 minute video. And we were like, screw this. Like it sucks. Yeah. And then we didn't even get in. So, but it was good practice, I guess. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for, you know, news anchors and people who are comfortable in front of the camera.
It's
a lot. Okay. So kind of wrapping up. So what has been the most rewarding thing about starting your business? And then what has been the hardest thing?
The most rewarding thing has been me seeing the true like goodness of people. Like there are good people out there, and being able to share something that I love because this is my passion, and having people be so gracious, kind, and receptive and want me to do well and encourage me to do well, people I don't even know, that has been incredible, especially with all of the racial tensions and stuff going on in our country right now. I got a card in the mail today from someone I don't even know thanking me for the message that I've put out and how much she's learned from me and asking me to continue going. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So, you know, I think that has been truly one of the most rewarding things. And, you know, because my kids are always close to my heart, I think modeling this for my kids and watching me do this has been huge for me. I would say the most challenging is some of the negative stuff that's come out, you know, from some of the content that I've put out there. That's been hard. But, you know, I mean, for anybody who's starting out, it is hard. It is so hard. But at the end of the day, I have my passion. I have the love of what I am trying to bring to the world. And I would encourage people to let that carry you on the darkest days. Remember why you began in the first place. Because once you get going and you get busy, you forget. And then you start to listen to the chatter and forget, like, wait, why did I get into this? Oh my gosh, there's going to be somebody that needs to hear my story. And, you know, like today, I passed the 200 followers mark, which, you know, I realized it's not like enormous, it's not like 1,000, but I'm like, yes!
That's amazing.
200 people that want to hear what I have to say?
Exactly.
I'm like jumping out of my skin, right?
Yeah.
And so I approach everything from a posture of such gratitude and humility because I feel so honored to get to do the thing I love and share it with people.
You are so incredible. I think that's probably the most important message that anyone could share, because especially now, I think we're so hard on ourselves and really like, yeah, enjoying the process. And of course, there's going to be tough moments. But I think like the biggest thing that we've really had to do as a team for us is like realize, you know, you're always like goal oriented, right? So we're always like, okay, the end goal is like, I don't even know what it is, you know, sell your company or just like be successful, right? This like nebulous like success. And it's like, you know, that could take years. And so why would you let, you know, the cool juicy parts like in the middle, you know, why would you fast forward those just for some like end goal that you may not reach? It's really just, you know, enjoying the ride. And and I just love your gratitude and your humility, I think, is so important in this whole journey, because I mean, it is, like you said, it is tough. And if you're not, you know, finding the joy in the everyday, then you're probably not going to last too long. So.
No. Yeah.
Oh, awesome, Francina. Well, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? Where can they? I'm going to include everything in the show notes too, but like if they're interested in trying some of your tea, is it your website or what's best?
Yeah. So, on Instagram, I am at Be Still Tea, and, Facebook is the same at Be Still Tea. And my website is bestilltea.com. So if you can buy my teas there, and so excited to be on this journey, and thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Oh my God. Thank you. I thought this was amazing.